as a mentor, I'll mentor you all by saying this. If you have a dream and you're young enough to pursue that dream, I can speak to the men out there. I'm going to speak to the men out there, not the women. So this is for the young men out there. Here it is. Whatever it is, and you have a dream and you're that age and you can make it happen, don't mess it up by getting involved with women.
Oh, Malcolm.
True. Because I lost my ball career because of women.
Well, let me speak to that because.
Yeah, you do that, Barbara. Go ahead.
I don't want to be sexist in this.
Oh, please be sexist. Go ahead, Barbara.
But I do want to say that I do know of a lot of men who did put their sights, and Dr. Pennington, I know you will agree, they do put their sights on unrealistic opportunities in the sports industry. Now, that is a catalyst to make you the best. They call it, there's a second league that you play in.
Mama McGee, are you trying to tell me I wasn't good enough to be a professional ball player in a kind and subtle way? Is that what you're saying to me?
Well, the big question on everyone's mind, it's a gender thing, or is it? World peace, religion, sex, money, politics, climate change, big business, big ideas and big egos. Nothing is off limits. As I'm joined by some of the most accomplished and highly opinionated women from the far left, the far right, and the far reaches of the planet. This is Malcolm Out Loud, and you're listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure.
So I don't really remember having a mentor when I was a really, really young man, although there were people who influenced me or that were around me. But it depends, again, how you define mentorship, I guess. And if it's defined in the traditional sense, I would say I really didn't have that. I wish I did, looking back, because I think a mentor, he'll could keep you out of a lot of trouble, potentially, if you do it right, or if you listen to the mentor, that is. If you don't listen to the mentor, that's a whole nother story. The one that does come to my mind, I'll tell you the story a little bit later in the show, but I love this guy, Uncle Bernie. I'll tell you my Uncle Bernie story later. And for those of you who follow me who know, you've heard me talk about Uncle Bernie before, but I guess he was as close as I would get to somebody who was a mentor kind of person. But all right, so let's talk to our co-host. Maybe they've had some mentors in their life. Dr. Andrea Pennington from Monaco joins us, and Barbara McGee from Los Angeles. All right, Barbara, did you have a mentor in your life when you were younger?
I'm excited to say that I have had several.
Several.
And I seek to mentor others, but I also remember and seek to be mentored in whatever field or wherever I'm going in my life.
Now, wait a minute, Barbara. Don't get sexual with us right up front here. We're not talking about that kind of mentorship. Come on. Come on, young lady. You went there right away. We ain't even into the pleasure component of this talk yet.
Well, it's just to know that if you are the smartest person in your group, just food for thought, then what does that say about your group and where you're going? We can learn from everyone that comes across our path because they have gone a different route to achieve their success or their wealth or whatever it is we're after or trying to achieve. In business, it is imperative to have a mentor. But what we're seeing now when we look at our younger people, we're seeing that the circle, Andrea, of older women who used to pour themselves into our lives is missing. And that link has given our young people a lot of book smarts, but not really a lot of etiquette and polish that goes with being a successful woman. Would you agree with that, Andrea?
Yeah, I think you hit it right square on the head, Barbara. But, you know, I think I'm glad that this topic has come up because, you know, one of the things that the producer shared with us was, you know, six things that great mentors do. But besides the fact of what we can do as mentors, I don't know if young people and especially women are exactly seeking out or are they looking for mentors. I don't know how many people have that in their consciousness. Because I didn't have that growing up. It wasn't until I got into medical school and then later that I realized, God, there's such value in having a mentor.
See, I didn't either, Andrea. So I can relate then to what you're saying, because I wish I had later on in life that, you know, you look back and you think, because I jumped right into life in a big way. Like everything else I do in life, I don't do anything part way, ladies. So I did that as a young man, too. I jumped right into life. I mean, like, bingo, bango, you know, businesses, life, stuff, school, women, the whole bit. And sometimes you complicate things. You know, I tell the kids today to slow down a little bit, man. We're so in a hurry to get older when we're like that, you know, teenagers, 16, 17, 18, 20, 22, you know, so we want to be older. But getting older can suck, too, ladies.
It's true. We're all, you know how it is. When we're young, we're always rushing and hoping to get to that next stage. Yeah, I wish that I had mentors earlier on. You know, I've often thought, though, to be honest, Malcolm and Barbara, I think back on the biggest mistakes that I made in like my 20s, for example, or even my early 30s. And I wonder if I would have even had the presence of mind to listen to a mentor. Because back in those days, I was so headstrong that if I felt something deeply, I mean, if I had a passion for something, I was going to go.
Imagine
I'm one of those people.
That, Andrea Pennington, headstrong. I can't imagine that. No, it doesn't come to my thoughts. And you say when I was younger, like you changed somehow. Get out of here.
No, I'm wiser. And I'm grateful to have, I've had mentors, you know, in my later 30s and now as I'm 46. And I'm grateful to go to those mentors now before I make mistakes, because the mistakes I made, I can look back on them now and say, oh, my God, I could have saved myself pain, money. I mean, don't tell me how much money I could have saved. But I was one of those people that I just like to, you tell me that the wall is hard. Well, I want to hit it and see how hard, you know.
No, you're so right. We trip up a lot as young people. We trip up a lot. Learning from it is the key in life, clearly. But you know, you think back, and if you did have some of that insight, I always worry the fact that, you know, I don't know, it's just really, something's really warped about all of this, ladies. You get, you kind of get, you know, to the, all right, when you finally get wise in life, and you like really get your brains, okay? Because I've often said growing up, between 15 and with my own kids, by the way, between 15 and 23, kids are brain dead. I mean, they don't have a brain, you know, and they don't get it back till they're about 23, some not till 33, but at least 23, they're like, they don't even know what's going on, man, especially today's generation. They're like way out there. So they kind of need a mentor, Barbara.
Well, Malcolm, I love what you said. I love your observation. But let me just speak to things that don't have structure. When you are aspiring to be like an actress, a model, you want to be a photographer, you
want to be a radio host.
Yes, a radio host, absolutely. Things that don't have the same kind of structure. And people who have become those things have done it and all have different stories to tell. It is imperative to have a mentor that has done it and gone before you, number one, and can tell you a little bit about where you are in each stage of the process. But when we have our own children, now everybody knows that that's my background is entertainment, and that's what I do, is mentor young people with that. But you'll also find that people give me their children for the express reason that during that age area that you spoke about, where you say that your children are brain dead, the interesting thing about that is they may be brain dead to our personal influence as parent units, but they are listening to someone, because that's how they learn, is through this collaborative. Our greatest resource for learning is through collaborative sharing. And trust me, they are sizing themselves up. They are looking at those people that they feel have stronger influences, and they are being led by someone.
That's a keen observation. You're right. And yeah, I worry about that with my daughter being just 11 now, but you wonder, who will she be listening to? Because to your point, Malcolm, you're saying these young kids today, they're just kind of off on their own. I don't know, this whole Generation Z and the millennials, They are very headstrong and they're very passionate, but I think they have better access to mentors, and I don't think they're afraid. I think this is a culture right now where young people realize, hey, this is an entrepreneurial world and you got to hustle. And so they can look at other sort of startups and entrepreneurs and start tapping into their wisdom. So I feel like you're right, Barbara. People, our younger generations are going to be learning from someone, but I think they have a pretty good pool of candidates if they leave their peers and look to professionals.
I think that professionals, okay, so here is where I see the disconnect. The disconnect is that we teach our children so much. Now, when I was a girl, it was evident. I had my aunts, my lovely aunt Jean Brooks, who was an educator, who raised her children wonderfully. They all graduated from college and are very successful right now in Southern California. I had other aunts who were in my church organization who stepped in and mothered me and scolded me and molded me and spoke into my life and even praised me, criticized me. All of that helped me shape who I was and who I thought I wanted to be. The interesting thing is now we teach our children to be more fearful of people outside of our family unit. You know, what did he say to you? What did she do? And, you know, we live in a much more suspicious world, coupled with the fact that we have these, you know, cell phones and we have the internet that creates another level of distance between us. So those people that should be pouring in their wisdom are not necessarily in our top 20 Facebook friends, Snapchat folks, or our Instagram followers. I mean, that's where we're headed. We're headed to people who are not successful that are pouring into our lives, people who have not achieved what we want to achieve for us, giving us criticism. We are finding that people online might even dislike us. And we are ruled by what they say, how many likes they give us. It is really an unfortunate situation.
Well, it's all changed, Barbara. It's all changed. I mean, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, you know, our worlds were smaller. So the people we related to and those that were in our influence were a much, much smaller sphere. Today, as you just said, that sphere is significant. I mean, it's wide. I mean, and I don't know of any kids. I can't think of anybody in my mind who's not connected in social media. I can't think of a soul I know that is a young person that is disconnected from technology. I don't know a single soul. If they exist, there's certainly not anybody I know. I mean, everybody. And that generation, they are so connected. I mean, they live it, they breathe it. Like, you know, you're dealing with that, Andre, with your young daughter now. She's on there all the time, as mine are. I mean, they're just, it's constant. And you have to like pull them off of it. You have to excavate them from this technology. It's crazy. And they go into hysteria. Like if they don't have a phone or whatever it is, I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. It's almost like they go into convulsions and you sort of feel sorry for them, but you don't really know what to do. You know, it's not good stuff for them, but it really is an addiction. And it's a massive addiction. So it's broadened that big world out that they're engaging with these people. The big problem is, who are they really engaging with? And if those are some of their mentors, we could be in trouble. And that, I think, is where a lot of problems happen, actually, with the young folks, is they're being mentored by some less than spectacular people online, quite frankly.
Absolutely. If parents are listening out there, you know, or if you have influence over young people like your nieces, nephews, I think it's time for us to have, you know, circle talks where we get a chance to put down our Palm Pilots, our cell phones, our internet-based information gatherers. We need to put those down and just spend some time on an event or spend some time pouring into these young people. It is so important, if you're successful in your life, to have a protege. That is so important.
Barbara, I have an idea. I have an idea for you. This is for you. This is a great idea for you, okay? You have such compassion. As long as I've known you now, I always feel you've got passion and you're very compassionate. But when it comes to young people in particular, you mentor, you do a lot of that. So you know what? We need to create a radio show for you on America Out Loud, but we need to call it Mama McGee. Mama McGee. Yeah.
Oh, and
Mama
I McGee, like that.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's phenomenal. Mama McGee gets online and she talks to the kids. With the kids' hip and the kids, all of this. I mean, that would be, I was just thinking when you were saying that, well, why don't some of us who have the wherewithal, the knowledge, and the basis of really wanting to help, you know, do you remember the organization called Big Brothers, Big Sisters?
Oh, I do, yes.
That was a big national, not-for-profit organization, which, right, they help young people. Those are really cool organizations where they're mentoring, and I've always enjoyed those. But it's no different than the Scouts, the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts. That's another form of mentorship. The only problem is you can't rely on those organizations to babysit for you. That's where the danger comes in, and I've seen that happen too many times, far too many times, in fact, where people use those organizations as babysitters. And that is such a bad thing. I've seen more problems come out of that. So, but it's good to engage. You just have to understand and know who is the mentor. You know, who's the mentor and the responsibility of that mentor. You know what I'm saying?
Well, before we go to break, I just want to say that just quickly. You know, you do know and you do understand that many times when you're mentoring a young person, Dr. Pennington, would you not agree that you're also mentoring the parents? Because sometimes the disconnect becomes a therapeutic moment where you're giving therapy to the young person. And you're also, because I had the same thing. I had an aunt, my Aunt Gloria, who was the go-between between me and my mom. I'd tell her my side and she'd re-explain it and give it to my mother. And then my mother would tell her what she thought and then I would get the verdict.
There she is in the limelight. I can see her now. Mama McGee and Dr. Andrea Pennington. And we'll pause and be right back with you. Well, we're a new breed of talk radio, and with a new breed of host and shows to entertain and inform you. It's America Out Loud Talk Radio, with shows like Blue Lives Radio, OPSEC Radio Special Operations, shows that impact your health, like The Misdiagnosed Life, The Dr. Stem Show, What's Inside You, Mind, Body, Energy, and our newest show, Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. Thank you for sharing part of your day with us here at America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. We are back. Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. It's Malcolm Out Loud here with Dr. Andrea Pennington from Monaco joins us as our co-host today, and Barbara McGee from Los Angeles. We're talking mentorship. Whether you had one or you didn't have one. But visualize this, friends. I mentioned to you about Mama McGee. You can see the pictures now there of Barbara walking in, and she's like, you remember the old nuns that have the nuns? Even my art teacher. My art teacher was, well, I had two art teachers. They were as old as old, like an ancient tapestry rug, you know? And they would have like those rulers, you know, those 12-inch rulers that were metal. And when you ever did something that crossed her, she'd come back and she'd whack you with the ruler. Now, they could do that back then. In fact, I told you stories before on this thing. My science teacher at seventh grade, he didn't like the fact that I was experimenting with frog legs in the room by seeing if they could fly across the room. And I remember him bringing me over to the window. Do you remember me telling that story on here? And he hung me out the window by my ankles and said,
oh my
you
God.
Will not throw frog legs in my class, you little bastard. And of course, this was a school that was right near the highway. So as he was, you know, and you know, they never got in trouble for any of that. I mean, he literally took me by the ankles and shook me outside the window. Now you want to know why I'm brain dead today, ladies, huh?
Oh, Malcolm, no, I haven't heard that story.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but that's serious. Old school where, you know, a teacher could actually lay hands on a child, whereas now, ooh, That teacher would have been,
Now you can't. Yeah. In fact, I still remember his name, Andrea, Mr. Gambardella. Mr. Gambardella. I'm going to call him out on it, but he did not take too kindly to my. I was a little bit. I know you can't really imagine this much at all, ladies, but I was a little bit like the class clown sometimes. You know.
Mm-hmm.
You have a hard time seeing that, right?
No.
Yeah.
Met up with you. He was done.
Yeah, exactly. You will not throw frog legs in my class. And everybody sits there and laughs, you know. Anyways, I could have probably used a mentor right then, I'll tell you. All right, so tell me, Barbara, your greatest mentor story. What is it exactly? Before we get into these six tips, tell us your best mentor story.
Oh, that's interesting.
I know.
Right, my best mentor story. Well, here's something interesting. As a young girl, every summer, my aunt and uncle and their kids from Southern California would come and visit us. And I was raised an only child. So there I was waiting, watching the windows for, like 3 or 4 days to wait to see them pull up in their camper or in their, as we got older, they got these RVs. And eventually it got to the point where my aunt and uncle would pull up on the block and they would look like Aerosmith. You know how Aerosmith has their traveling, I don't even know what you call it. I guess it's
a record. You've got a cool freaking family, Barbara McGee.
Absolutely. They're the best. And what was so interesting is now that my parents have passed away and my aunt's husband has passed away, my aunt and I have such a special relationship. And the greatest thing is I admire her for her ability to have raised successful young people. Her children and grandchildren are all pointed in the right direction. Now, they got problems like everyone else, but they have a sense of family. And I think that is the most important thing that I need to understand from her is how did she craft such a wonderful family structure where they're still together today? And I think that's what's important for us is when we look for mentors, we need to find the people that are successful in what they're doing. And those are the mentors that if they will accept us as students, we have to be able to listen and we have to be able to share and be humble enough to accept criticism.
Because why reinvent something if it's been done already? Why not pick up what they've done and make it better? You know, that's how you live and learn from folks. And I often think of that. With innovation and just you take a look at what other people have gone through and you take that. In fact, that's part of the American spirit, ladies, if you think about it. It's innovation. It's where the rubber meets the road. It's when you take a concept or an idea and you improve upon it. You make it better. You make it more interesting. You make it fascinating. You make it your own. I mean, that's the nature of invention in this country, I think. So, Andrea, what is your your best mentor story? Because you had mentors a little later in life, you said, yeah?
Yeah. They really came, I think, in my 30s is when I really kind of lucked up. You know, I've had two different types of mentors. I've had spiritual mentors, because I know you know, Malcolm, I go off into spiritual la-la land, and I really want to know, what is my soul meant to do? And I've also had professional mentors. So on the spiritual side, I had this beautiful woman named Reverend Jane, and I met her when I was just, I think, 33 or so. And I was at a crossroads in my life where I was really struggling because I had this big, successful media career, but spiritually, I didn't feel like I was on track and on purpose. And, you know, one of the things that I really valued about her was her being able to see through all of the kind of glitz and glamour into my heart and see, A, that I was suffering, and B, just giving me that safe place to explore following my heart and following my passion. And I think that's so valuable because as mentors, and I certainly do this now, I recognize that sometimes people literally need permission. You know, permission to dream, permission to try something, permission to go bigger and go better. And in the mentoring relationship, we create a safe space or a safe container that says, you know what, even though you're an adult now and, you know, there's lots of risks and things on the line, I see you where you are and I think you can step up and go further and I'll be here. And working with her, you know, even to this day has been a huge turning point in me because it's allowed me to integrate the soul and the intuition and the heart and the passion into what I do professionally.
From a youngster forward, the fact of learning to be able to sell is like critically important. I mean, everybody's got to be able to sell no matter what you do in life. And when I say sell, like a lot of people I hear in my ear, they say I'm not a salesperson, you know. Everybody has to be in sales because you're always selling yourself, right? That's a form of sales, right, ladies? Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you're selling something. We're all selling every day. And so I learned as a young man the value of selling. I used to do door-to-door as a young man when I was really in my teens. I would sell things door-to-door. I would set up lemonade stands up and down the boulevard. You could see Mr. Little Entrepreneur out loud, you know. I made everything into a. I made everything into a business proposition. I would learn how to. I mean, I did so many things entrepreneurially as a young man. But interestingly enough, my Uncle Bernie was an incredible salesman, and he made more money in sales than the doctors and the attorneys made. You know what I'm talking about? Right?
Oh my. Yeah.
I mean, if you're good at sales, you understand the deal. What I'm saying to everybody is if you're good at sales, you can make one hell of a living. I mean, incredible. So Uncle Bernie was one of those cats who made more than the doctors and the attorneys, very clearly. Well, it's just like, ladies, it's the same thing, think about it, as some of the people who are professional servers. I mean, at some of like the best hotspots. I mean, these people, this is a massive career. They make more than, I always laugh at people because they look down at them. And you should never look down at anybody, no matter what they do for a living, number one. And number two, most of the time, they make more money than you. Which I think is hysterical. Really, they do. I mean, you know what I'm talking about, the elite to elite, right? I mean, the creme de la creme, yeah?
Absolutely. Unreported income is what's
called. The people who excel in that business do really, really well. But it's a form of selling. So Uncle Bernie was an incredible salesman. And he was sort of my mentor a little bit later in life. He had seen how successful I was in my own business. I had my own media empire in my 20s. I was moving the world, shaking up, doing things, and really, you know, having some good luck. I got into the advertising business. And so, but there was a time in between where I needed the money. This was in my 20s, early 20s. And I remember being down on my luck. And Uncle Bernie always thought I was like an incredible salesman. He would always say, you could sell anything, man. You got that gift. And he would tell me that, and I never really understood what he meant. And he would always try to get me to sell, like he, again, as a star salesman, he used to sell check writers. They were like boat anchors, ladies, you know, the old check writer. And if you could sell a check writer to somebody who probably really didn't need it, but you could convince them they need it, like their world was going to end tomorrow if they didn't have this thing. That's a pretty decent salesman, huh? And he used to sell those and made phenomenal money. And so I ended up, when I was in between these careers in my early youth, I needed the dollars. He said, you got to come on here and sell these check writers. I said, I don't want to do that for a living, Bernie. I'm not. He said, I'm telling you, he said, you'll make really great money. Do you know, I jumped in. And this was at a time where, just before I started in my advertising industry. In fact, it was just before then. And I was in between, and I had failed in the business before that and collapsed, and I had nothing. I mean, I remember just losing everything in my life. And I went out, and I trained with him up in the Northeast. And it was cold weather out. And I remember training with him on these check writers, and he was a mentor, and I spent the week with him, and then I went out and tried to do it myself. And he said, you go ahead. He said, you can do this. Now, I needed the money badly, ladies. I had, I had a lot of responsibilities, and you know, you screw up, you fail, right? You pick yourself up, you got to figure it out. And I remember being up in a snowstorm up in the Northeast. It was snowing like hell. And I was in a car, my father-in-law's car, and I was far removed from sunny Florida or sunny anywhere, you know. And I was up there, and I had made a sale. So I went out the first day with a group of these check writers he gave me, and I was out selling them, trying to sell them. And the first deal that Monday was with a company called New England Linen Supply, and I had made the sale. And I said, oh, man, this is good shit. I got it. This was like late morning, right? And so she says, her name was Jane. She says, well, come back for the check just after lunch, and I'll have the boss man sign it and everything else. Oh, man, it's great. So I come back there, and the deal fell through. And there was no deal to be had, right? So there was no, I mean, she said, sorry, she said he didn't want it after all. And so it's snowing heavy now. I'm in my father's Ford Fairmont. Now, if you've ever driven a Ford Fairmont, ladies, and the trunks are made out of like aluminum foil, you know? And so I'm out there in the trunk. I lose the sale. I walk out of this New England Linen Supply. She's on the second floor. I walk down to the snow coming down heavy. I get to the back of the trunk of the car. I lift the trunk up. I go and I set the keys down. I go down and pick up the writer to put it in the car. And the wind blows the trunk shut with the keys in the trunk.
Oh, God.
And I said, this really sucks. I said, this is not what I wanted to do with my life, man. So, you know, you feel sorry for yourself. It's snowing out. I got no winter clothes because I'm not from the area. And it's snowing, and I've got like a little chintzy little thing on. And I look up, and I see this Jane look down from the second floor window toward the street to see me. And I looked up, and I just happened to catch a glimpse of her. And I could tell she felt bad because I felt like a complete moron. And so there were no cell phones at the time, ladies. I don't want to date myself.
Right.
But we didn't have cell phones. You understand? So you're going to whip out the cell phone and call anybody. So I said, oh, God, help me, please. I went up and I walked back up to that second floor. And I looked at this lady, Jane, in the eyes. And I said, could I kindly use your phone? And I called my father-in-law. And she said, I'm so sorry, she said. And I was, you know, feeling bad for myself. I called my dad, my father-in-law, and I said, hey, can you, you know, I locked the keys in the trunk. And luckily, he was a big fan of mine and didn't think I was such an asshole, which I felt like, clearly. And so he was in another city, in another town, in another state, probably about, I don't know, maybe 45 minutes or longer, maybe an hour, probably more of an hour. And he said, no problem, I'll be right over. He drove over. So in the meantime, I went up to a coffee shop. And there were no Starbucks then either, but I did get into a coffee shop. And I sat there and I felt so sorry for myself. I said, this really sucks. I said, I didn't want to do it anymore. So I call Uncle Bernie. And I tell Uncle Bernie what had happened. And he tries to give me words of encouragement. He says, now listen, you can do this. You got to think this. You got to think that. He gives me all the positive things as a mentor would, right? Right? He lifts me up. He said, listen, you can do this. Go out there this afternoon and put your best foot forward. And, you know, so my father-in-law comes over, gets the keys to the car, open up the thing, get out of there. And by the way, obviously my father-in-law came over to give me the keys before I went to get the coffee shop. You understand how that worked. In the meantime, I waited outside in the cold and was freezing. And so he comes over. Do you know I went out that afternoon and sold two machines?
Did you?
The next day, I sold three. The day after that, I sold three. I sold 21 machines in about 9 days. It was about 9 days. I'll tell you what. I learned to sell a few things at that point. And Bernie, as a mentor, made the difference. Of course, I was in my 20s at that point. But you think of the things you do when you're younger, ladies. If we only knew, and I always say this, if we only knew then what we know now, we don't know then what we know now, but of course that's part of life, isn't it? Right? We have
Absolutely.
To live, we learn, we move on.
And I love the fact that you said you kept trying, because that's it. You know that we will get many, many, many no's, and the no's will not affect us. It is the yeses that we wait for.
It takes the no's to get to the yes, Barbara, definitely. And that's something you have to remember in life. it is a point of failing to move forward. I call it failing forward, actually. And I do a lot of writing on this. I do a lot of speaking about this, that you fail forward. And these are all the steps that you learn in growing in life. And as you get to a certain point here, you know, I was just looking over these six tips here. And there's takeaways on each one, which I've just noticed some of the takeaways are very, very interesting and very valuable, actually, as lessons go. It really is about lessons and having a mentor. So if you're old enough to be a mentor out there, you should be one. You should be one. Look at that organization. I know they're doing incredible things around the globe. Big Brothers, Big Sisters. I'm sure there's a whole lot of organizations like that. Well, like I mentioned the Boy Scouts or the Girl Scouts earlier as well. Any of these kinds of sporting groups or that sort of thing, you'll become, and that's what coaches do, actually, coaches of a team. They become a mentor. They become a mentor to the kids that they teach, and they learn, and they grow. I think mentorship is really, really cool. We're going to jump into these tips, I promise you. I know I stalled before with that story, but we're going to jump into these tips in just a moment. We'll be right back with Barbara McGee and Dr. Andrea Pennington. We are excited indeed to be celebrating our one-year anniversary here at America Out Loud. And we could not have done it without you. Well, in short order, we've become one of the fastest-growing podcast and talk radio networks in the world. For all the latest news, entertainment, your blogging, and now web TV, as we celebrate our one-year anniversary here, and we'll see you back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Well, I'm not sure why we take our health for granted, but I know that many of us do, include me in that company. Recently, I had a couple of health scares that got my attention real quick. I started a new product called Healthy Cell. I took it for about 3 weeks, and man, I started to feel really good. I found myself sleeping better at night, had more energy in the day, and less stress and anxieties, and just feeling better overall. Well, with those kind of results, I knew I had to do something, so I reached to the company directly with a request to bring Healthy Cell back to America Out Loud, and here it is. Well, typically you'd pay $110 plus shipping and handling. Well, now you get it for just $79.99 for the monthly plan plus free shipping. That's right, they'll pick up the shipping, and you pay just $79.99. Use the code OUTLOUD on HealthyCell.com, or just click the banner on the front page of AmericaOutLoud.com.
What does it take to be a good mentor? What would you look for if you wanted to find a mentor? Well, we're going to talk about it. You're listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. I'm Dr. Andrea Pennington, and with me today is Barbara McGee in sunny California, and of course, Malcolm Out Loud. You know, getting back to this article, we noticed that in Entrepreneur Magazine, they shared six things that great mentors do differently. And Malcolm, you mentioned this concept of failing forward. And I love that tip number three about these great mentors is that a great mentor is not going to sugarcoat their failings. Even I, in my early days of being a teacher, I felt like I had to be perfect. But in fact, by being a mentor who's willing to show even their mistakes and their shortcomings, it allows our mentees to learn the easy way. Instead of learning how most of us learned these embarrassing mistakes the hard way.
Many times, these failings or these particular failures at the moment, they are designed purposely in your life. And they're designed as sort of roadblocks at that moment. And you know why? Because they're supposed to stir our path another direction. Now, I really believe this at this point.
So wait, Malcolm, are you saying that there's a hand of God or there's a destiny thing where these little roadblocks would literally be placed there?
Absolutely, okay. Because everything in my life points to that, Andrea. There are so many things in my life who have kept me on this really interesting road, and things happen for the weirdest reasons, and I can't sometimes make heads or tails out of it. And then, and as I've grown older now and I realize there's a purpose to all this, and I believe it is a divine purpose, truly. And there's a purpose to our life and part of that destination. For instance, a lot of the people I'm supposed to meet along the journey, like I meet some incredible people every day, but there are people I know keenly that are supposed to be in my life, and there's a reason for it. And I may not even understand at this moment what that reason is, but I know there's a reason for it. I think that's a big lesson in life.
Absolutely. But I think it's important for us to let our listening audience know that a failure is not trying. That is what failure is when we don't extend ourselves, when we feel that, oh, well, it's too much work. Oh, I'll never be successful at that. Oh, I should just stick with status quo. That is failing. Trying and not achieving exactly what your goal is, but learning from that effort and using your preparedness to mix that with the appropriate timing executes your success. And that's what we say in the entertainment industry, that, you know, if you didn't get that commercial, it wasn't because you weren't beautiful enough. It wasn't because you didn't know your lines. It wasn't because you were late, because all of those things you embody. And of course, you know that you did everything correctly. It wasn't your commercial to have. The next one is on the way. There's one being constructed for you right now. And what you're doing right now is just paying your dues.
I like where you're going with this, you two, because it brings in this element of faith. And do we have faith that life is a positive place for us? You know, we often say that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. Mm-hmm. And so I think the same is true with a mentor. If you really say, you know what, I want to make the most of this life, if you do have the faith that people and opportunities are going to be brought into your life right when you need them, that could be exactly what happens when a mentor steps in. And they're willing to, you know, as this article says, they're willing to present you with certain challenges and take you to task.
Well, young people, they haven't lived it yet. And that's what number four is. Great mentors have the experience their mentees want. Because I see more and more now, experience is really the key to all of this. You know, you don't have the experience when you're in your 20s. You can't possibly have it. There's no way. You haven't really lived yet. You don't really know it at the time. Maybe you think you know everything. Some of us think that way when we're in our 20s. And then we learn soon enough thereafter that we don't know it all. But experience can only come in time. And it can only come from those failures that are so important in life. It's how you deal with the failure. Here's something important I want to ask you both. And I'm not sure what the answer to this is, which is why I'm going to ask you two, because you're both smart. So here it is. And I don't know what the answer to this is. So I consider it a borderline. It's a very fine line. So what's a fine line? Persistency. Knowing that you are so determined, whatever it is you're going to do in life, right? Whatever that is. There's so many things to this. But, you know, persistency. You fail, you pick yourself up, you get persistent. You're going to do this. You're going to, like you said, Bobby, the one that wasn't the commercial. The next commercial may be the one. I don't know which one's going to be the one, but persistency. What is the difference between having that persistency and that determination in life versus staying in the dance too long? There's the other part of this where you just don't know enough to come out of the rain. Knock the shit off. Get out of here. You're not only determined anymore, you belong in the stupid club, you know? And so these two worlds, to me, fight with each other. They clash badly. And so it's something I deal with, I talk about with other people. Take a shot at that. Andrea, do you have any clue of what the difference of those two worlds, where it is? Persistency and stupidity.
Yeah, you know what? I think that what you're describing is called discernment and wisdom. And I think when we're young and we're a little pig-headed and super determined, we might be persistent and not know when to quit. But that's okay, because that's part of the learning process. I don't think I always knew when I should throw in the towel. And, you know, obviously we have different ways of judging. Like I might have thought if I give up now, then I'm a quitter. People will think I'm a loser. So we have different motivations for staying in. But I think with age and with wisdom, we learn to recognize the signs and we can say, okay, no matter what anybody else thinks of me, maybe now is the time for me to bow out. I don't know. What do you say, Barbara? I think it's wisdom and discernment. What about you?
Well, I agree thoroughly. And, you know, I think we misuse our mentor when we create an atmosphere of therapy. So there is a therapist that we can bring on board when we feel uncomfortable in our own skin and in our direction. That is a different piece to this puzzle. I think a mentor, however, will tell you honestly, or at some point when you're mentoring and shoring up yourself, that if you want to be an actor or you want to be an actress, you need to be taking classes. I mean, the desire as we're getting older is there burning. This is what I should be doing. This is where I should be going. But the parameter and the preparation tells me that you need to be especially driven in the Lee Strasberg theory. You need to understand what is method acting? How does this work? You need to pick an area of expertise and then know everything it is to know about that area. And there is nothing wrong with keeping your dream alive as long as you understand that you need to continue to strive to be educated.
So like Barbara, for instance, if you wanted to be a professional ball player or a star actor or whatever, but let's say a professional sports player, and what you're saying is you have to have the skill sets to be able to pull that off, right? I mean, it's one thing to have a dream and a theory or an idea, whether it's a professional sports player or like the most brilliant dancer ever, right? I mean, you've got to have the skill sets to pull that off, right?
Well, here's the thing. The ball players, that's a very interesting thing you brought up. I just had a talk with a young man just the other day at his graduation about playing ball. You know, there's how many? There's millions of young people that want to play in the NBA. What are your chances of playing in the NBA and you've come from a private school and you are not doing travel ball? Probably second to none. And we have to know the odds to understand where we're going. Now, does that mean you can't coach? Does that mean you can't work in the back office? Does that mean that you can't be in the NBA but not necessarily on the field or on the court playing? No. I mean, there are so many opportunities to find yourself in the genre you want to be. But if you decide you want to be a model and you want to be on the runway and you know that you need to be at least 5'8", then there are constraints that you operate in within your dream. So you have to understand what the constraints are so you can poise yourself properly.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, if you're right. I mean, 5'8", 6 feet, you know, whatever, and you're 5'2", that's not going to work so well for that particular sport.
Okay.
Point taken. Well, in full confession, ladies, I wanted to be a professional ball player when I was a young man. I used to play sandlot ball and I played in school. And I so wanted to be a professional ball player. And I was very good at it. I played center field and I could pitch. Love sports. Absolutely love it. And I would have dedicated my life. But, you know, the other lesson I'll give to everybody that's listening that's young enough to realize the importance of this. As a mentor, I'll mentor you all by saying this. If you have a dream and you're young enough to pursue that dream, and I can speak to the men out there. I'm going to speak to the men out there, not the women. So this is for the young men out there. Here it is. Whatever it is, and you have a dream and you're that age and you can make it happen, don't mess it up by getting involved with women.
Oh, Malcolm.
True. True, because that's I lost my ball career because of women.
Well, let me speak to that because
Yeah, you do that, Barbara. Go ahead.
I don't want to be sexist in this.
Oh, please be sexist. Go ahead, Barbara.
But I do want to say that I do know of a lot of men who did put their sights, and Dr. Pennington, I know you will agree, they do put their sights on unrealistic opportunities in the sports industry. Now, that is a catalyst to make you the best, they call it, there's a second league that you play in.
Mama McGee, are you trying to tell me I wasn't good enough to be a professional ball player in a kind and subtle way? Is that what you're saying to me?
What I'm saying is there's all types of levels of ball play.
There's professional. Well, let me tell you what there is. I know this industry. There's Major League Baseball, which is where I would have been had I kept my zipper pulled up properly. Then there's AAA ball underneath that, AAA, yes. Then there's AA ball under that. And then you've got all kinds of classes under that. So, yeah, there are many levels. But listen, if you're a winner, you're going to shoot for the sky, my love.
Well, don't get me wrong, but what do you do when it doesn't happen? And there's a lot of men that have shot for the sky, were great athletes, and are not able to reconvene themselves to engage outside of, let's say, basketball, football, and baseball.
You've got to be willing to put it on the line, Barbara. That's the answer. You take a look at the Olympics, Barbara. You take a look at the difference of winning gold and bronze or no medal at all. Just take a look at that. That is a lesson in life to me. And if you're going to win, you've got to be willing to put it all, I mean it all. And you see the pain in their eyes? I mean, do you see the pain?
It's okay to put it all on the line. But let me tell you what else is okay. Recreation and redefining yourself and finding something else that you're just as
absolutely passionate. Absolutely.
It's exactly how we change our channel and how we shift ourselves for success after the
Barbara,
success.
Never use the words changing the channel when you're on radio, love, but go ahead.
Yes.
Never use that, love. That's lesson number one. I'll be your mentor a moment. Go ahead.
But that's what I'm saying. Now, Andrea, do you see that also in a lot of men that you've dated and known that they just never really got over their love affair with sports in high school and college?
No, I haven't, actually. In my experience, I found that they were able to accept it and they channeled it into, you know, doing it recreationally or doing it on a, I won't even say semi-pro, but, you know, still competing. You know, even if it's with the neighborhood guys. So no, I haven't had that experience where someone really just didn't accept it. But
when you put your mind to it, you can do about anything that you want to do in this life with your God-given talents and abilities and your determination of your mind, because that's really it. The mind, the brain, our brains are just, I tell you, it's having a strong mind, having a strong brain is somebody who's, you know, really focused here, laser focused, ladies. That's a gift. That's a gift. And luckily, I've been one of those determined cats over my life that it doesn't keep me down. Whatever's going on, I've been blessed to be able to develop and find that opportunities, you know. But that's what you're going to do in life, right?
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, you got to do that. So that number one on that list, I don't want to lose sight of that. Great mentors take action. And so the takeaway on this is it's easy to talk a good game in mentorship, but it's the mentors who follow through with actual action that stand apart from those willing to offer advice alone. So I like this, and it means you get involved as a mentor and you help them out and you help them with leads and ideas and thoughts. But this is a lesson for all of us that words are cheap, action not so much. You know that, ladies.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely a principle that I have taken on. As I've gotten older, I'm much more selective about the people that I take on as mentees, simply because I know that I get frustrated if I pour a lot of time and attention into someone and I believe in their potential. I want them to take action, and I match it by stepping up, you know, putting them in good position to succeed, and that's whether it's getting them into good networks or giving them opportunities. So, yeah, I definitely believe that a really good mentor will, you know, put up when it's time to.
I've got an idea for you, Malcolm.
Uh-oh.
Why don't why don't you come out to Los Angeles, and I will put you in the next commercial that I style, that they hire me as a stylist. I will put you in as one of the professional baseball players. Ooh. And we can get the outfit for you, and we can get those pictures taken, and we can make you feel better about yourself at this stage in your life. In other words, if you can't be the main actor, you can always be the commercial actor. There's always a place for commercial acting, for commercial print.
Barbara, I think you're dissing me on this show here. I think you're screwing with me. That's what you're doing. What are you? Well, I've always been nice to you. Why are you being such a bad girl this afternoon? Why?
Well, I'm just trying to give you an opportunity to see that it's never over until it's over.
You're trying to pay back. This is payback to me. What did I do to piss you off last? Let's hear it right now. Come on, McGee. Mama McGee, let's go.
I think everybody outside of our voices understands that now they have a new task. And the new task is to understand who is in your camp and who can you add to your camp to help you achieve the goals that are the desires of your heart. And I think that's what's most important for us to do, is to look and see and add those who are already achieving at the level that we want to achieve, that are already doing the things that we want to do, and that are already successful. So there's a lot of noise out there, folks, but hone in on those who speak positivity in your life. And remember, you're the captain of your own ship, and God will do the blessing of the rest.
Well, there you go, girl. I can't wrap it up any better than that. And quite frankly, everyone is, you're right, they are the captain of their ships. And very well said, Barbara McGee. And so we'll connect these mentor articles here to the post. Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure and Mentorship today. Dr. Andrea Pennington, Mama McGee. This is Malcolm Out Loud, to be continued, friends.